The Palestine Report with Hafez Ibrahim Musa.
Habisab, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, shukran.
Let's start off with the three significant announcements relating to Palestine.
Yes, the first one coming from the Israeli government, and they announced this week that they are not renewing something which is called the Temporary International Presence in Hebron, in the city of Al-Khalil. This is an international force that has been in the city for at least 20 years, monitoring relations between the Israeli army, Israeli settlers and Palestinians, and trying to achieve some sense of normalcy. The fact that this particular force was in this area just indicates to the high tension of Hebron, as well as the caliber of settlers in the particular area, known for their right-wing nature as well as hard-handedness to Palestinians. So this particular force was in the city of Hebron since the time of the Ibrahim Christian massacre in the year 1994. It was renewed under the Oslo Accords as well as the Y River Accords. And according to the official mandate, they were there to monitor and report on efforts to maintain normal life in Hebron, as well as create a sense of security for Palestinians. And periodically, they've been reporting on human rights abuses. Mainly a European force. They come from countries like Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, Italy, and Turkey. And Netanyahu has said, in refusing to renew their mandate, which is done every 6 months, that this particular force has been acting against us. And he's been under pressure from the Israeli right to do so after some videos emerged suggesting that members of this particular force had, in one instance, slashed the tires of an Israeli settler, and on another occasion slapped an Israeli settler. But those seem to have been two isolated incidents. The members of these particular countries have accepted this Israeli decision, but at the same time condemned it, saying that it's a violation of the Oslo Accords. And on the other hand, the Palestinians have said that this is the trend of the Israelis to annul all signed treaties that have been signed and have been ratified before. And they've used this particular occasion to highlight that Palestinians in Hebron, but the entire West Bank as well, are in need of a United Nations mandated international protection force. So that's one announcement. The other one from the United States of America, the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, also announcing this week that it's ending all of its aid to Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The reason for this, it has been suggested, is that there's a new U.S. law that's coming into effect that will make it easier for people in the United States of America to sue the recipients of American foreign aid, accusing them of being funding terror, etc. So this is one reason. This aid will also affect the Palestinian security forces, but it's also been suggested that this end of the U.S. aid is part of Trump's so-called deal of the century and related measures such as the cutting of funding to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA. And the final announcement, this one coming in from the Palestinian government of Rami Hamdallah, they submitted their resignation to Mahmoud Abbas, who accepted this particular resignation. So Palestinian politics have been in a stalemate for a very long time, and the resignation of the Palestinian government just adds to the sense of stalemate.
Now, Netanyahu's main challenge boasts of his so-called achievements.
Yes, so until now, if one is to look at the race, the Israeli electoral race, we know the Israelis are going to the polls in just a few months' time. And it seemed as if Netanyahu was standing head and shoulders above the rest. There wasn't a clear challenger coming forward. But now it seems things have heated up significantly. The man who's vying for the top office in Israel against Netanyahu, amongst others, is Benny Gantz. He is a former army chief, former Israeli defense IDF chief, And he's formed a new party, which is called Israeli Resilience, or translated obviously from Hebrew to English as Israeli Resilience. The polls have showed that he's gaining significant support. In fact, one particular poll says that he'll get almost an identical level of support like Netanyahu. For Netanyahu, this comes at a very bad time. The Israeli legal system seems to be squeezing in on him on corruption charges, and now he has this. But what are the reasons why Benny Gantz seems to have boosted his popularity? Obviously, he made his first campaign speech, but what's the kind of platform that he is standing on? It seems to have been summarized in a video that he released for his campaign, and the campaign doesn't show, the video doesn't depict him himself or have him making any promises. The backdrop to this particular video is a destroyed and bombed out Gaza video footage after the 2014 Israeli assault on Gaza. It boasts of Gaza being returned to the Stone Age, and Gantz was the head of the Israeli army at that particular time, striking 6,231 targets and claiming that 1,364 terrorists were killed. And the slogans used in this particular video by Gantz are that only the strong wins, and with Gantz it will be Israel before everything, suggesting that even human rights will have to take second fiddle to that. Gantz has also promised that he will assassinate the Hamas leaders and continue the illegal settlement enterprise and ensure that Jerusalem remains Israeli, the Israeli capital. So once again, it seems as if Palestinian life is being cheapened and becoming center stage for contesting claims between the various political parties ahead of Israel's elections.
Now, a Palestinian schoolgirl was killed just days after returning from Umrah.
This is a very sad story. The girl's name, 16-year-old Samah Zuhair Mubarak. She was an 11th grader. And as you mentioned, Morana, just returning a few days ago from Umrah, she was heading off to school in the morning in the past week, carrying a school bag. She is declared in Niqab. She's from the area of Ramallah. As she came closer to an Israeli Israeli checkpoint, she was asked to stop, and the Israeli army has released some footage of the incident, but heavily edited, so one does not know exactly the sequence of events or what happened before she was asked to stop. She was fatally shot at close range, and as has been suggested by some eyewitnesses, she was left bleeding, and no first aid was allowed to her. She died from her wounds. There are some suggestions that she was asked to remove her niqab, and when she refused to do so, she was shot. The Israeli claim was that she was trying to stab an Israeli soldier, and you know, there was a knife found next to her. But whether this is the actual story, many Palestinians actually doubt it. What's more worrying is that after she was shot, clearly fighting for her life, she was handcuffed in that particular situation. Israeli soldiers all surrounding her, pointing rifles at her. And subsequent to that, her father was also kidnapped and placed in Israeli custody. And with her death, she becomes the third Palestinian child to have been killed so far in the year 2019.
Now, a temple movement figure conducted a wedding ritual at Aqsa.
Yes, people do know the figure quite well. He's Yehuda Glick, who is a rabbi as well as one of the most prominent leaders of the temple movement. And in the past week, he remarried after his previous wife had passed away. But prior to him actually conducting a formal marriage ceremony, he paid a visit to Masjid al-Aqsa, and in the company of fellow settlers, as well as an heavy Israeli police presence, as well as in the presence of his fiancée. He conducted some sort of marriage ritual in front of the cameras, all in the presence of the Israeli police, who allowed this to happen. And obviously this is part of his general policy of increasing an Israeli presence, making this a religious center for settlers, as well as changing the sovereignty over the place.
And then finally, Hamas appeals for Bitcoin.
Yeah, this is intriguing story where we have Abu Obeida, who's the spokesperson for the Hamas military wing, the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigades. He issued a message on Telegram this week saying that Hamas is now going to be, on particularly the military wing, is going to be accepting or is asking for donations in Bitcoin. It did not specify the exact channels just yet, but said that they are going to be publishing these details in time. The backdrop to this, it seems as if funding from other sources becoming much more difficult. We know that Hamas, according to some international powers, is a terrorist entity. They claim it to be a terrorist entity, and therefore they barred using the service of conventional banks. So this seems to be a way that they're using to circumvent this particular ban because of the anonymity of Bitcoin. So it's being suggested that on the one hand, this is being used to shore up funds of the military wing because of the difficulties that are coming about because of other conventional sources being shut down. On the other hand, it's been suggested that Hamas coming into this particular field, it shows its resilience, and it's trying to, you know, embrace all kinds of new technology to shore up its funding. But what is curious about this is that the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigade is usually quite circumspect or you know, secretive about its dealings, is coming to the open with such a request.
Hafiz Ab, as always, jazakallah for your time. We'll talk again next week, inshallah.
Wa alaikum
assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Hafiz Ibrahim Musa with this week's Palestine Report.